From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Namdi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Also joining us in studio is C. Anthony Muse. He is running for Prince George's County Executive. He's a member of the Maryland State Senate. He represents District 26 in Prince George's County. Senator Muse, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon to both of you.
If you have questions or comments for the State Senator, give us a call at 800-433-8850. Send email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show. Go to our website, kojoshow.org, and join the conversation there. Before we get to the Senator Tom Sherwood, I want to go down to Virginia and talk about what's happening in Prince William County, because the incumbent delegate, Robert Marshall, is refusing to debate his Democratic opponent, Danica Rome. He says that debates are not as civil as they used to be, but these are two people who know each other well. Danica Rome covered him for many years as a reporter. They attend the same church, but it looks like to some people he might be running scared. Is that what's going on here?
Well, I think he's a veteran member of the legislature, and I don't think he wants to give her, Danica Rome, any more attention than she's already gotten. And
he's raising about six times as much money as he has.
Well, more. Yes. Well, he talked about a distinct lack of civility. Well, a number of people in the state would say that he is a principal participant in that, with some of the things he has said about, sometimes incest is voluntary, that he said that some children with disabilities are could be God's vengeance for abortion support and things like that. So I'm not sure exactly where civility falls on this, but Danica Rome, she was here on this program. A lot of people have said she's doing a remarkable campaign, and you have to know that if you want to talk to her about any issues, her big issue is Route 28. I mean, I think it's almost a 50-mile road, and she said it's a horrible road that the delegate Marshall hasn't helped, and that it's a big issue for her, not all these other social issues that people ascribe to her. And she says she just wants to help the people in her county. It's a pretty good campaign. And if I were him, just politically speaking, a strategy session, I wouldn't debate her either.
Well, she has appeared on this broadcast. We have invited Delegate Marshall on several
occasions. He's called in a few times.
Exactly, but he has declined to appear since this campaign began. One more campaign we have to talk about, our non-campaign. Former D.C. Councilmember Vincent Orange says he has no plans to run for office in 2018, yet our Martin Ostermill reported that he wrote a letter to the Board of Ethics and BEGE, the Board of Ethics and...
It's the Board of Ethics and Government
Accountability.
That's correct. As in begging.
Asking if, were he to run in 2018... could he win and still maintain his position as the CEO of the D.C. Chamber of Commerce? And the response was, yes, legally you could, but it might raise some ethical questions. But the former council member, who I've gotten to know better in recent years since he left the council, says he has no plans on running, but the letter makes it seem as if he does.
Well, let me see if I can parse my words here. If he were when he was defeated, he kept his council seat and then took a job as the head of the D.C. Chamber of Commerce and said he wouldn't give it up until his term was up January 2nd. There was a great hoo-ha about that.
Hullabaloo.
And he finally decided it would be best because it was hurting the D.C. Chamber and his role there, so he stepped down. If he were not going to run for office again, and he has run many times, I think his first campaign was 1990, running against John Wilson for the D.C. Council chair job. That's how far back he goes. I used to joke that we should just change the law and put his name on every election ballot because he ran so many times for mayor and different things. But so if he weren't going to run, and this, he's just trying to clear his name of what he did last year, he could have said, I have no intention of running. He could put that in the letter. Because he's run so many times, Mr. Orange may well run next year if he sees an opportunity. So it was just an unnecessary embarrassment for him.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. And when I see him again, I will certainly ask him on to the candidate at hand. Senator C. Anthony Muse is running for Prince George's County Executive. He joins us in studio. If you have questions or comments for him, call us at 800-433-8850. This is not your first time aiming for office. You previously ran for County Executive unsuccessfully back in 2002. What's different this time? Why do you think you have a better chance?
Different this time is my years of service in the Senate. As you know, I've served 1 4-year term in the House, 3 terms as a senator. I've also served as the state ethics commissioner. That kind of experience in just about every area that one can imagine that would help to run a county, I've gotten that experience since that run. I think it's important. I've served on the House Ways and Means Committee, Education Subcommittee, Transportation Committees, Minority Business Task Force, Health Care, Financing, and on and on. It takes a multifaceted approach. Budget and taxation, dealing with maybe 2,000 bills. I've had to take over 10,000 votes in the years that I've been there. And some votes were pretty hard. And I think experience lends to one thing. I think your experience and life's experience is also a place a part there.
I have a bigger question than that.
Yes.
What's the C in your name for?
The C is for Charles. That's just between. Oh, we're on the air. Okay. I was going to say it's between.
Too late.
Us.
Not even on your Wikipedia page does it say what it stands for.
I've just made that public announcement.
I thought your name was.
Is it a name for someone? That's a person. What is it? Charles is a family name?
No, it's not. In fact, and that's part of the other reason that I served today, I really never knew my dad. I was brought up in 11 foster homes. I literally lived on the streets.
11 foster homes.
11 foster homes, lived on the streets of Baltimore, slept on the streets of Baltimore, and I was finally adopted by a Methodist preacher who, at the age of 13, they became my family. He became my dad, and what he said to me is, when you make it, don't forget to give back. And that's what I've tried to do. I've tried to follow his footsteps. He went to heaven last September, but he got to see a kid who had been kicked out of 3 school systems go back and get a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctorate, and follow in his footsteps.
Have you ever? This is a little off point, but I think it goes to the heart of what people are. Have you tried to find your natural parent?
No, I never have. No. I know my mom.
And
not
with
my
no
dad.
Disrespect for your foster parents by that at
correct.
All.
Yeah, correct. Once that turn took place in my life, they became and they are to this
and
day.
And a Methodist minister?
Yeah, I was a Methodist pastor, yes.
Okay. Did that help you lead you? You know, I was. You know, people don't know this, but I was going to be a minister.
Okay.
Your brother is, isn't he?
And my brother is. He's a Baptist minister. Okay. But in the 9th grade, I wrote to Emory University, and I asked the university to send me the information there in Alabama of what I needed to do to study to be a minister. And they wrote back with this core curriculum of Hebrew and history.
Yes.
And I said to them, I've had the wrong call.
Greek, Hebrew, when I got to seminary, I was wondering that myself.
But did your foster father guide you into becoming a minister?
Yes, he did. He had a lot of guidance, and I was so appreciative that for once I had a dad, and I had someone who believed in me who only said one thing, you have to turn around and you have to give back. And that's why I do what I do.
This campaign has already started. Again, I want to say it first, and here on the Politics Hour. Angela Alsobrooks is a very popular state's attorney again. Prince George's County.
And an announced candidate for the same position.
Right.
So Prince George's County
so
Executive.
So if you could, with respect for her, because I know you're not doing a negative campaign.
Exactly.
What's the big difference?
I would say the big difference is everything that I will say I'm going to do, I have done. Let's take education, for example. When it comes to education, we look at the problems that we have in our school system. Being involved in education, I was for the elected school board. It was my bill that took them back to an elected school board. I believe that education had become a big business in our county rather than focusing on our children. I have also been involved with vocational training everything that I know that we can do to make our schools differently, I've already attempted to do that. And let me just say this.
And the county executive picks the superintendent.
And the county, well, now the county executive. I don't think that's the way it should be. I think the school board should pick the superintendent. One of the things with the process that we have now in our county is that there's little accountability, and there's little accountability because the power has been taken from the people in many areas where they should have some input. When it comes down to the schools, most of our people are now appointed. If you're appointed, you're not going to run for election. You're not going to listen to people. Land use, it's the same way with land use. There's another committee now as opposed to five elected officials making those decisions.
If I can be allowed to interrupt, I wanted to get back to education again.
Yes.
Because that's one of the things you're focusing on.
Correct.
Before the county executive took over the school system and appointed a superintendent, there were seven superintendents in less than 20 years at a time when the board was appointing the superintendent. Why do you feel that system was better?
I don't feel that the system itself, we're talking about democracy. The same thing has happened in every other elected area. You elect senators, you elect delegates, and let's face it, none of them has been perfect. But to take democracy away and to say the citizens should have no input, I don't think that's the way to go. And let's also keep in mind that when this happened, we've been back and forth from appointed to elected, from appointed to elected. However, the people never made those choices. All the polls have shown that people believe they should have a right to vote for their school board representative. All of those changes were made in the state legislature, depending on who decided for what reason they wanted to make those changes. I've been consistent about that. I have been consistent about vocational training in our schools. I did the hearings on the grade fixing, you know, accusations, and I did those hearings and listened to 300 persons talk to me.
But
we have some problems, and I think that we've got to focus on our students.
If you win this race, you will be the one who decides whether the superintendent stays or goes, and you've made no secret of your view that the current school's chief, Kevin Maxwell, should not have had his contract extended. If elected, would you ask for his resignation? And given that he just signed on for another four-year term, can you ask for his resignation?
I believe I can, because the legislation says that whoever the CEO is, they serve at the pleasure of the county executive.
And you will ask for his resignation.
And I will ask for his resignation. And if the board wishes to rehire him once that is restructured, they can do that. That should be in the hands of the board, because those board persons must also be accountable if they are elected again to their constituency. I think that's the fair and right way to go.
I have to say that I've lived through and covered some of the reorganization of the school system in the District of Columbia. I've seen what's happened in Montgomery County and it explodes. I think it's now the largest school system
Sure.
in the region, right? It just seems to me that there's so much politics around
Too much.
School systems, whether it's the mayor appoints or the county executive appoints or the elected school boards. And I keep hearing all these programs, and we have a new five-year program that the chancellor just announced in this city. And I just, as a parent, as a citizen, I just get weary of all these changes to the school system. It don't seem where people are just learning. I mean, some
Sure.
of the basic things. I said if I were a school board member or in charge, I wouldn't let someone play baseball unless they could do the math to show what their batting average is or something like that. It just seems to me that the society is speeding so fast ahead. Our education system is back in the agriculture era.
Well,
would you support year-round schooling and maybe
I would support,
stop the summer stuff?
I think that we have to make summer school as an option. We have
an option.
Why not just four quarters like
because
college? There are students who are not doing well when you get to May and they're not doing well. They don't go back until next September. Some are failing grades altogether, and they don't have to fail if you were able to offer summer school. And let me say this. No matter what the process has been in Prince George's County, here's the one thing that is a constant that concerns me. When I was elected in 1995, Prince George's County was 23 of the least performing. Out of 24 jurisdictions, we were 23 of the least performing systems. whatever we have tried has not affected that at all. Because here today, we are still 23. So forget all of the drama of who is in charge, who's not in charge. Here's what is clear. We've got to put less emphasis on testing our kids and move that out. These tests are irrelevant. We've got to look at the fact that while we say we're graduating more students, the scores are down statewide in terms of reading and other areas. So we've got to go back to reading and writing. We've got to go back to phonics. We've got to go back to vocational training. We've got to have our teachers free from having to take most of the time teaching kids how to take a test in order to get federal funding. Something's got to change with that. And we've got to be able to focus on individual kids. Everyone, they won't learn the same. When I first got elected, they said to me, here's what we all said. We want smaller classrooms. 20 years later, we're still saying smaller classrooms. But every time a school it gets small in terms of population, we close the school and then we send the kids to. So we've not been serious about that. I want to be serious about that. I want to be thoughtful about that. I want to make sure that we have smaller class sizes by not closing these schools, but making them specialized schools in which persons with, whether it's learning disabilities, whether it's certain areas of expertise, we can make it work.
Budget problems to address a lot of those, but I don't think Kojo wants to go to this phone or something.
Because Alexandra in Bowie has been waiting for a while and wants to raise another issue completely, one that I frankly hadn't even thought of. But Alexandra, it's your turn. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, Alexandra, it's your turn.
Hello?
Hello, Alexandra. Can you hear me?
I think we're having trouble.
Yes. I think you're having trouble because we're hearing you very clearly. So we're going to put you on. Can you hear me now?
My question is, thank you for taking my call. Mr. Muse, there has been a proposal for a superconducting magnetic levitation train to come through Prince George's County, and it'll be at high speeds of 300 miles or greater.
Yes.
They're talking about, if this project is going through, that there will be eminent domain involved. And I would like to know what your stance is on this project, if you support this project, or you would fight to keep it out and to keep our homes and communities from being torn apart by a high-speed train going through.
Ma'am, thank you for your question. That's one of the things that I mean. When it comes to our county, transparency, accountability, with a lot of decisions are made in a vacuum, and citizens simply get the results pushed down their throats. There is no way that I would stand by and watch anyone lose a home for something that is simply coming through our county, not really being, we've got to look at transportation, not just moving through our county, taking people, somewhere else, but there are a lot of other transportation needs in our county that we have to look at. We have dirt with the bus services and getting from Hyattsville to Fort Washington, something in the county. But no, I would not. I would go back to the governor and say to the governor and say to the county executive, no, we're not going to disrupt and take people's homes for this.
You think they would put that high speed train through Chevy Chase?
I believe there are a number of places they wouldn't put it through. But yeah, you're right. No, I have to just say, if citizens should not be now getting this information that, gee, we're going to take 25 or 30 homes, why weren't they involved in the initial process of being when they sat down to think of this, have citizen involvement, homeowners involvement? This happens all the time. It happens not only in your area, but it happens, for example, the other day someone said to me, there's a new huge liquor store going up across the street from us. I didn't know that. And by the way, there are three liquor stores within two blocks of that. These decisions are being made and it's not being made with citizen involvement.
You have said the county's current leadership is pursuing things residents didn't ask for and don't want. Is that an example of what you mean by that?
That is an example. That is exactly.
Any others?
In my school district, there were two prominent schools that were closed. They were closed down and we could not get the CEO. We took 400 people down to the school board. He wouldn't show up for that. I am the sitting senator. If you won't call me back so that I can have an explanation, even if I agree with you or not, I need an explanation as to why these schools are being closed in my district. And this is happening across the county in many areas.
It has excuse me, has Rashern Baker been a good county executive overall?
I would say you have to look at what were their areas and what were their priorities. His priority was development. If his priority was development, then in the area of development, I think he's done a good job. I think that we could do better by having development that would include minority and small businesses from our county, because that's not the case. We're in single digits when it comes to minority participation in development and in businesses. I think that my job would be, how am I going to do, what is my vision when it comes down to having a world-class cancer research center? I believe that we've connected with enough persons to know that we can have that done. When it comes down to economic empowerment zones, I think it's important for me to not just talk about who didn't do, but what am I going to do?
What about the Amazon headquarters?
I want to be an advocate for that, for Greenbelt. That's right.
Would you spend county money to get that?
I think that
Amazon's not
going to
give it somewhere free.
Nothing comes free, but you don't have to give away everything to get a mere pittance. It would be negotiating. They would have to hire from our county, not just using the words best efforts, but with punitive measures involved. If they don't hire from our county, it would have to be businesses that they are doing business with for goods and services. The priority would be from our county.
I've talked to Jim Denninger of the Board of Trade. He's stepping down at the end of this year, but he was saying 50,000 jobs in the Washington region, wherever it were to go, if it were to come here, would be extraordinary for this region.
Well, we've said it about many things that have come to our county, but we've got to be sure that when they say the jobs are coming, that they are for the citizens in our county, and they're not bringing them their own workforce into the county. That doesn't help us. In fact, that is what has hurt us.
Got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be continuing this conversation with C. Anthony Muse. He is running for Prince George's County Executive. He's now a member of the Maryland State Senate. He represents District 26 in Prince George's County. If you have questions or comments for him, give us a call, 800-433-8850. If you've called, stay on the line. We'll get to your call when we come back. You can also send us a tweet at Kojo Show, email to kojo@wamu.org, or go to our website, kojoshow.org, ask a question or make a comment there. I'm Kojo Namdi. Welcome back to the Politics Hour. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist with the Current Newspapers. Our guest is C. Anthony Muse. He's running for Prince George's County Executive. He's currently a member of the Maryland State Senate, representing District 26 in Prince George's County. If you have questions or comments for Senator Muse, call us at 800-433-8850. Send us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. Speaking of development, Senator Muse, you opposed the National Harbor Casino when it was initially proposed. Now that it's in operation and it's apparently pouring millions of dollars into the school budget and county coffers in general, how do you feel about it?
You are correct. I did oppose that being located in my district and in that area. I thought more. There were many other things we could have attracted there. My major concern now is the money that's coming in. We promised people that the money would go into schools. But when you look at the way it's going now, it's going into the general fund. We're still coming back saying to people, gee, we need to raise your taxes by 10% to 15% because we don't have the money to furnish schools, to finance our schools. And what we said is that this would be more than enough. It's there now. I've got to be their senator. I've got to be a representative. But I want to make sure that people get what they say and what we promised them that they were going to get. All of the money, not part of it, all that was promised to go into schools should go into schools and not into the general fund.
Let me talk money a little bit before Sherwood takes over. As a minister, both of the churches you led ran into financial difficulties, including your church in Upper Marlboro, filing for bankruptcy in 2012. Should that concern residents who might be putting you in charge of the county and its budget?
No, and let me say this. That's not accurate information. The church that I retired from or resigned from in Brandywine never saw, and this is what they keep reporting, that the church was in bankruptcy. That church never saw one day of bankruptcy, not one. I resigned from that church. The congregation, members of the congregation, went with me. There were three pastors appointed to that church after me. That same church of which you now speak, three pastors were appointed there. 4 years later, after I resigned, they sold the building. They never went to court, never had a bankruptcy date. But every election for the last 18 years, people continue to bring that up.
That was Gibson Resurrection United Methodist Church in Brandywine?
That is correct. And as a United Methodist Church, it's like the Catholic Church. I don't own the church. I'm getting moved. I have served four churches over 40 years. Since I was 19 years old, I was the youngest appointed pastor in the Methodist Church. All the property is held by the denomination. I can't sign for a note. It's in our church. Our trustees do that. I handle the spiritual life of the church, and it's not like tithes or not like taxes. Taxes, you have to pay. Tithes, people determine whether or not they want to pay, and sometimes churches run into difficulty. But in even with the second, they never filed for as it is believed, a chapter 13 or 7. We did what Rashawn Baker has done, what our governor has done, what Donald Trump has done. We simply had a loan that was $72,000, interest only, bogus loans, much like they give to, like they were giving to homes in our county, as they were taking homes actually in our county from those kinds of loans. We simply filed for reorganization so that we could be protected and get the loan that we needed.
You know, there's a big discussion about whether the president, well, not a discussion, a lot of complaints that he did not release his taxes. There's still efforts to get that released. Do you think local officials like county executives and mayors of cities should release their own income taxes 3 or 4 or 5 years of record? How much? Because things are so complicated these days in terms of financing and what's happening. Then I often said, well, maybe reporters ought to release 5 years of their income taxes. But at what point do we do public service and private inquiry?
Well, I think we already do. We have to fill out the finance forms in the state of Maryland. As I said, I was an ethics commissioner for the state of Maryland.
That's why I
reviewed those. But at what point would you stop that? I would say, again, what my real concern would be is that we have a transparent government to our citizens. When it comes down to like the issues that were just raised today, what are we going to look like 5 or 10 years from now? Who's going to make those decisions in terms of development and what comes, and who's going to make those decisions to make sure that inclusiveness for our county businesses and minority businesses
would it help the voters to know what your financial structure
would be? I wouldn't have a problem with that. I really would not.
Okay. On now to Willa in Oxon Hill, Maryland. Willa, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, and Kojo and Senator Muse. I am calling regarding the funding for the school or the shortage thereof of funds. I live right adjacent to National Harbor. The only thing that divides my property is a fence. I'm a single parent who had to pay for public school education while sacrificing to send my child to private school so that he got a good quality education. So I am really, I don't like the fact that they're asking for more money, trying to raise our taxes again. And basically, when my son, he spent 2 years in public school, after being in private school, when he got to the fifth grade, the work that they were doing at Fort Hood Elementary School, he had in second grade at Clinton Christian School. So he was not challenged. If you, by chance, I would like to see that addressed, because you have people that are sacrificing to send their kids to private school because the education is not that great in public schools around here. But then again, you need to hold the parents of those kids attending the public schools accountable.
And how would you suggest doing that, Willa?
Well, basically, my son attended Fort Hood, and it was so many behavioral problems in there. He saw kids fight other kids, kick them, you know, just basically. The parents don't come to...
Well, there are other jurisdictions. I remember years ago, Milwaukee tried to punish parents for things that their kids did. Didn't work out so well. Senator Muse, what would you do?
Well, let me say this. it is difficult to get parents involved. I was one of the initiators of our Step Up program. It was a program that we did in our district with parents and educators that brought parents together in terms of incentives. There were many ways that we tried to do it. And here's the bottom line. If parents aren't going to get involved, they are not going to get involved. We have an obligation, however, when it comes down to our schools to make sure that they're getting what they need in order to prepare our students. And I don't see where that is often being done. We talk about money, and you raised the question, ma'am, about money. Let me say this. I had a problem when we gave $1 million signing bonus to our CEO, and we look at the salary and we look at those that they've brought into the county from other places, all making six figures. It's not just that. It's the LDC fund.
What is the LDC fund?
That's a local development fund where the area was promised that they would have this large amount of money that would come into the impacted areas. It's been dwindled down to from millions to about $200,000. Something is wrong when we keep making promises and we don't keep them. So one, we've got to keep our promises. Two, we've got to have better accountability. Three, we've got to have transparency. Four, we've got to write the laws so that what we tell people we're going to accomplish, we do just that. I want to go back and make sure that every dime that we said would go into schools and to the local development council, that that's where it goes, not skirting around it by putting it into the general fund.
If I could, I'd like to go back to churches in the county, because I was in the county on Monday. Went to former police chief Ike Fullwood's service at the Ebenezer Church. And I was walking around up in the balcony because the church was full on the main floor, and I was just amazed at how large the church was. And I know that we were talking offline a moment ago. There's at least a dozen, 15 mega churches, as they're called, in the county. That seems to me that's a lot of voters, and I know they have all different kinds of opinions, but also that's a lot of economic power, it seems to me. It's almost like an industry within Prince George's County is the churches as opposed to somewhere else.
Well, I guess in this area, there are a number of people go to church. They go to church constantly, and there are a number of churches who are doing good things in their communities, and that's who we want to partner with. We want to partner not just with churches, but we want to partner with businesses and others. And yes, they are large churches, and each has their niche, their niche in terms of what they're doing in the community that they serve. They come together. They talk. We try to work on certain social issues, because it is the church's obligation and responsibility. My dad often said to me, who was a pastor for 40 years, he said, if your church is located in a community, and if you move and nobody knows you're gone, then you really haven't done anything for that community. And I believe that.
And there are social issues. I mean, I know many churches oppose same-sex marriage and issues like
You've taken positions in opposition to same-sex marriage in the past.
Right.
Go ahead.
But the state still has passed those.
That's right.
Those measures. So politically, I'm just wondering, some people are concerned that membership in churches of all types are falling.
Well, I don't think membership is falling in churches. I don't know nationwide, that may be a stat that is right. I think that, again, churches have taken positions on everything from drinking and alcohol, adultery, everything that there is. But our mandate is to love the people that we serve, whether they agree with us or disagree with us. We're called to love people. We're called to serve people. And at the end of the day, look at those areas that we hold in common. For example, affordable housing is common in Prince George. There's a need for that. I don't care what your sexual orientation is. You want to be able to live and afford to live in a house. You want to be protected. You need police support. You want your kids to go to good schools.
How is crime doing in the county?
It depends on
where you are.
And it also depends on classifications. You know, what do you classify as a crime that goes in this category? So it could be down. It could be up. It all depends. I think across the nation it is down. But in terms of violence, in terms of deaths and murders, I every day, I'm just overwhelmed at the calls that we get and what's going on in terms of people just not caring about people in these horrendous murders.
Got to go to the phones. Here's Wilbur in Mitchellville, Maryland. Wilbur, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Ron Meese, it's a pleasure to hear you on the radio. And I guess you know when I published my book, about 6 months ago, The Power That Never Came. You rated as the number one legislator in the state of Maryland. I want to congratulate you, The Power That Never Came. Also, I want to
thank you.
I am concerned about how our young black males who go to court and plea bargain, as well as settlements in the county, from the police department all the way down. It seems like the settlement is always done behind the scenes, and a lot of the records are never expunged with people who plea bargain, and years later, they come looking for jobs and cannot get hired. And I think that's appalling. And this goes on and on and on and on. And
Wilbur,
no one is doing anything about it.
Wilbur is clearly complaining about the criminal justice system and how it works in Prince George's County.
And if I may say, there are a few, and I recognize that. If we've gotten a copy of Michelle Alexander's book, Mass Incarceration and the Era of Colorblindness, I went back as a result of that, and I sponsored the expungement legislation. I authored and wrote the expungement legislation that's now in effect in Maryland, because we realized that a number of persons who went to jail really should not have gone to jail. Plea bargaining may suit some cases, but it's become the norm, so that 80% or so of people who are in jail never saw their day in court, because quite frankly, they were scared to death. You either get 20 years here or you take 2 years and walk, not knowing that their records would not be expunged. I dealt with the Justice Reinvestment Act for the last 2 years, so that we are clear that nonviolent persons can get out, but we also are protecting our citizens as well. So that's been a
speaking
a major
of court.
Area.
Some people took issue when earlier this year you co-sponsored legislation taking the bail bond industry side on bail bond reform. The bail bond industry did not like the idea of requiring judges and court commissioners not to take into account a defendant's ability to afford bail when setting the terms of trial release, or asking them to take it into account when setting the terms of trial release. Why did you?
The Washington Post said I took the side of the
actually,
bail.
I'm reading from the Baltimore Sun.
Well, they said that. Let me tell you what I did. I took the side of people that I represent every day. The people that I represent wanted an option. I don't want to see one community fighting another, and we have the stats to show that since that has gone into place, more poor people are being kept in jail because judges are now saying, if I don't know that you're coming back, I'm just going to hold you here. All I wanted was an option. I don't want a teacher who's pulled over. Let's say you're teaching, you're pulled over for, you know, you're driving under influence. And under this rule now, you don't just come and say, I want a $500 bond and let me go to trial. No, this rule says you as a teacher will now go to class with an ankle bracelet on. So I tell people, don't talk to me about a $500 bond when in lieu of that, what you're telling me is that these folks are now going to have to show where they are. They're going to pay $500 a month for an ankle bracelet. They've got to go to counseling. They haven't even been found guilty of anything. That's a problem for me, and I took the side of people,
Tom,
and
sure
I continue to do that.
We only have a minute left.
Very quickly, in the District of Columbia, the mayor just announced, and David Grosso, a council member, they want legislation that would say, they say there are 40,000 arrests in the district. More than a third of them are not prosecuted, and they want those records sealed. Is there something like that in Maryland that you guys would do?
I believe that we have to look at the entire criminal justice system, not only in Maryland, but across the country. I am very dedicated to making sure that one, persons who belong in jail should be there. But the system that we have, where too many persons are in jail, they don't have the kind of representation that they need. I want to make sure that, and when they get out, what is a second chance?
Let me ask very quickly. Do you think Donna Edwards is going to get in this race?
I'm not sure. I just know I'm in it, and I'm in it to win it.
Okay.
See, Anthony Muse, he's in the race for Prince George's County Executive. He's a member of the Maryland State Senate. He represents District 26 in Prince George's County. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
Good luck
you.
To you.
Thank you very much.
That's it for the show today, Tom, except to congratulate D.C. Council Member representing Ward 1, Breanne Nadeau, and her husband, Jason Harpster. Why are we congratulating them?
Had a baby.
She had a girl
they
this
had
past
a baby.
Week. Tom Sherwood has some advice for you, but we can't give that on the air.
Yeah, I can very quickly.
No, you cannot.
Baby, the only thing you have to know about babies, they leak at both ends.
That's it for the show today, but we'd like your help in shaping Monday's program. We're going to be exploring why neighborhoods throughout the region are complaining about noise since flight paths have been changed to major airports here. Do you live in a part of the region where you've noticed more airplane noise recently? Let us know by tweeting us at Kojo Show or by emailing kojo@wamu.org. We'll share your stories on the air when we talk about it at noon Monday. Until then, have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.